And welcome to the Maverick Radio Hour. I am your host, GT Maverick himself, coming to you from lovely Westport, Kansas City, Missouri. And it is a beautiful day out there, I must say. And it is September 22nd, 2021. So, first off, I'd like to say apologize for the jackhammering that you might be hearing in the background. There is some construction happening on the street. People are working. They are getting it done, so to speak. And we're just going to have to work with that and work around it. Hopefully you can hear me all right. Hopefully we are broadcasting. This whole setup is still a bit new. We're still working out some kinks here. But I think we're running and I think we're rolling. If it does not show up on the Source Radio, I will be adding this to my website at www.tuftysvariations.com, where you'll be able to hear the broadcast in most of its entirety. Also, the one from last week as well will be added up there. I just thought of it this morning. I was like, hey, that'd be great if I posted the previous week's broadcast the day before the next live show, which is today. But like many things in life, you figure that out after you could have done it. So hindsight's 2020, but we'll shoot for it next week. So to continue on the subject matter and the thoughts that we were rolling with last week, and to hammer home that point once again, the method versus subject matter and how we create our reality with that method and that subject matter. The subject matter is more like nodes. These are bits of data, you might say. These are what they call facts, except when they're misfacts or someone makes it up. But nonetheless, that's the subject matter, and it's up to us to decide and determine whether what we're being told about this is accurate and true. So the subject I was bringing up before and the general idea behind this is that there's so much going on in our world and the quote news can't necessarily be trusted. So how do you determine what's happening? And this is the way you find a method. And generally you build off of something like build off of theories that have real practical value, such that, for instance, Newtonian mechanics has been astonishingly consistent in how it predicts the actions of the physical world, such that we have been able to utilize this theory in order to create things that are practical and beneficial. Like, for instance, the jackhammer that's working right outside. Such that utilizing these the scientific method and the theories that underlie our reality, at least to an extent that is practicable, we thereby know that they have weight to them, and that there's something to it, there's some meat to it, that we can utilize for our practical benefit and in our own lives. So that's that method. And the subject matter is, especially when we're being told by various authoritative figures that have clearly lied about, nearly everything for most of our lives, it's important and vital that we find a way in order to determine what's really happening. And generally you go with people that you really trust, who've been consistent in the past, and who you know are on the level. That can be difficult. And sometimes we have to get down to the base level, get based, so to speak. And for that matter, I'd also like to say that this last week has been an incredible, I want to say momentum building massively for Team Human, so to speak, that is interested in liberty and freedom and constitutional principles. So people are rising up all across the world. Australia, which went full on, you know, full fascist, some while back with their lockdowns. And again, this is the sort of thing. If you haven't looked into this and really done your due diligence about what's really happening elsewhere in the world, and also here in the States regarding the virus panic itself and how it's been abused by those in power and authority to basically enslave the free world, you need to go out there and listen and check out some new sources. And the real doctors, researchers that have looked into this and are willing to speak up about it, because there is so much coercion. There's threats and bullying going on at the top level that has basically permeated through our institutions. So many of them are corrupt by this point, and it's clear that that's the case. So you just look at the statistical, there's generally one thing that I'd like to point out when it comes to the virus panic and how there's no need, first off, to be afraid of it. That's the first thing, is the fear that's being brought on us. But the most significant statistic on that front, even with a lot of the numbers being doctored, because we know that death certificates have been altered, the protocol through which doctors and morticians and others call out the cause of death has been gamed by not only a monetary incentives, but also by threats and it changes at the top level in their protocols from the World Health Organization and the CDC and others. But the most significant statistic that I'd like to give for you is the fact that the average age of death from the coronavirus is roughly equal to the average life expectancy. So this is a statistic that explains beyond, I think, any other ones, just how not deadly this thing is. It's no more deadly than life itself. This virus is no more deadly than life itself. There you go. There's no reason to be any more afraid of that. And putting a mask over your face isn't going to save you. Now, if you want to try that, go ahead. Give it a shot. But the line gets drawn where you force others to do it. That's where bullying comes in. That's where threats come in. That's where the line is drawn. And that's the whole reason we got the Constitution itself and the Bill of Rights. They were written up to prevent this very thing from happening. Abuse of power by those in authority. There's a framing there that is vital to how we operate organizationally and in an authoritative manner. When an authority goes outside of this framework in the boundary of the Constitution, particularly in this case relating to the First Amendment, that's the most clear violation of this. Literally, the first clause of the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights says, "Congress shall make no law restricting freedom of speech." And how else can you restrict freedom of speech any more than by slapping something over your mouth? Full stop. Forget all the other context around here. Forget out the explanations that you're given. Oh, this is why we're doing it and blah, blah, blah. Oh, it's because of this virus and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, people are dying and, oh, China, you know, this, that, or the other. You can forget all that. What's the best way to stop to restrict people from speaking? Slapping a mask over their mouth. Boom, right there. Full stop. This is going on. What are we? How far are we into this? Year and a half? I think it's a solid year and a half now, starting with March, depending on where you are and depending on the state and that sort of thing. But this really is a political issue. And this is the sort of thing, it's been done before in prior eras of history. I guarantee you that's the case. Doesn't show up necessarily in the history books, because probably part of the reason, not only that the people who write those, a lot of people who write those history books have been slowly, you know, corrupted over the course of the last 100 years or more, but also because there's a sense that this is a group psychological aspect to how this works, that admitting that one got conned is very difficult for a lot of people. For me personally, I can tell you any number of times that this has happened, that I got fooled by one person or the other, or by a group, or by some line I read in a book that influenced my life in some sort of manner or the other, that that ultimately I realized that, oh man, well, that's nonsense. Why was I listening to that? And I was perpetuating that this bull to any number of people. I can look, there's certain aspects, particularly certain aspects of the climate change and global warming world of things that that I got caught up in some while back. Generally, a lot of it is gets tipped off emotionally. That's how the con artists work. They pull at your heartstrings and play with your emotions and manipulate them to such a level that they can get you to believe something that you don't see with your own eyes. And it goes against what you view with your own senses. But there are many times that I've got hoodwinked like this. I've gotten conned. And just about everyone in this world has. And it's the sort of thing that people do not want to really admit. We don't want to admit that. Because you admit that, and then all of a sudden you're this this gullible sucker, and oh, anybody can take advantage of you, and showing that you got burned, or admitting it is shameful to a lot of folks, and it's guilty, but they feel guilty, perhaps. Yeah, more shame, I suppose. Now, these various different negative emotions that. We don't need to split hairs on that necessarily, but one reason or another, and this goes a very, very good line that leads to that, is that it's much easier to fool people than it is to convince them they have been fooled. And so that's something that's been passed around. It's something to remember as well, while we're trying to wake up the world to the con that they have been. That we've all been put under and imposed upon us, really. It's getting to the point where the people in power don't care. That they stepped out of that door, they shut it, and really it's just lip service, them paying off a few shills here or there in order to justify or provide some rationale for this abuse, when really they're clearly just abusive. They're clearly control freaks, and any number of other possibilities. You know, where does this go? People are talking about depopulation. They're talking about enslavement. They're talking about clearly further restrictions on our rights and liberties, which is actually happening. You know, a lot of people who would speak on this greatly online for years have been warning us about this. And I'd like to remind those that the scientific method. Is really, when you get down to where the buck stops on the scientific method, it is. It's not the method, not necessarily the method in which you use to determine something. What you do is, but we'll roll over that here. Quick refresher on what the scientific method is. You run an experiment. Generally, you have subjects that you change a particular, you minimize as many variables as you can, i.e., let's say you're doing some sort of physical experiment. You make sure you have an enclosed room. You don't have wind coming in. You don't have extra light here or there. You determine the atmospheric makeup of the area around, the material structure of the floor, wall, all that sort of thing, and you have a a system that you can mostly control. And then you put your, you have your billiard ball, and you knock it against your other billiard ball on the floor, and then you determine, okay, this is the way it went, and this is what it hit, and this is the portion that it was. So you minimize as many variables as you can, and that's where you do your experiment. And then you have an area where you do the same thing, but you don't bother with minimizing other variables. And so you have your control group and have your experimental group. And then you observe both of them, and you look at the data afterward, check back with your hypothesis. Your hypothesis is that, okay, we added this additional action to this system, and I expected to have this outcome. And then you see if it works. Did it happen? Did that outcome occur? If it did, great. If it didn't, that's great as well. You learned something. All the same. So that's your basic scientific method. And there's various ways to reduce variables, regardless of what you're trying to figure out. That hypothesis, yes. So where the rubber meets the road, and where the point of that scientific method really shines, is whether your predictions turn out to be accurate. So when you have, let's say you have that hypothesis and you run that experiment, and you say that your theory is that, okay, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. This is Newton's second law of motion. And you test that out, and you test that out every time that there's an action, there's some sort of rebound or bounce back to it. And this is the very thing that allows us to walk on material objects, that makes material, for that matter. So it's a prediction of the future, really, proper theory comes out to. Now, when you apply this to the socioeconomic world and political world, what you can see is that all those quote, so-called conspiracy theorists have been derided for decades in the media. Turns out that they predicted this. They saw it coming. Now, they were warning us all about this. I was listening, and at the same time, I've been spending a fair amount of time, best I can, trying to wake up a lot of people about this as well, that there's something coming on. And this is apparently what was coming on. And so clearly, when it comes to the metric for whether a scientific theory is valuable, you can look at the predictions of a whole lot of people who've been saying that this sort of thing was coming, this attack on the free world was coming long ago, and you can know that they knew what they're talking about, and you can expect that they probably know what they're talking about now. So that being said, I would encourage again all those out there to go out and check out these alternative radio hosts, theorists, writers. They're all over the place. Some of the places to find them, generally, some of them have been kicked off of YouTube and other mainstream online sources. But you can check them out on AM radio, on places like Rumble, places like BitChute, and Library, Odyssey, the Substacks, Minds, other places. And I want to encourage you to go check that out, because these folks have been doing this for years, and they are the giants, so to speak, that a lot of us are standing on in order to determine the next step for us to get out of this attack on the free world. Now, this is something that I would like to say in regard to a lot of commentators who are viewing what's happening, that for the last year and a half, often enough, you'll read in the paper that our freedoms are under threat, that we are in danger of losing our basic rights and all of that. And I'd like to point out very, very specifically and very emphatically that we are not in danger or under threat. We were in danger 10 years ago. We were under threat 5 years ago. This is an attack. We are under attack right now, free people of the world, in order to maintain some institutional integrity amongst the astounding levels of corruption and abuse that are going on. So it's unfortunate that this is happening. Nonetheless, we're going to get ourselves out of this. And again, I would like to point out that my biggest contribution to this is the New Economic, which is the first part of my contribution to the Great Awakening. And it is a systematic, methodical, transformational economic renaissance that you might call a super jubilee of sorts. And you can see this on my website, www.tuftysvariations.com, or if you see me in the street, feel free to ask about it. I'll explain it to you. And generally, I like to communicate this in pamphlets and charts has been the most successful manner of doing so, because they're very simple. It's real paper. You can see it. You can grab it. You can touch it. And you can pass it on. You can read it easily. It's quick. Pass it on. There you go. For most people, all that we really need to do in order to advance this idea and others is to give it a read and pass it on. You know, don't necessarily need to go out and get angry about it and shove it in people's faces or anything. No, just pass it on. Give it a read and pass it on. That's usually the way that we have established prior first principles of philosophy. For instance, that of the Golden Rule, which is treat others as you would like to be treated. This is pretty vital, and I think I mentioned this last week as well, that it really is a miracle that such a thing came about. Because prior to that, what you have is natural law, which is do no harm, and off of do no harm, eventually, through us interacting and creating civil societies and learning to be good to each other, we ended up at some point in multiple cultures across the world, similar to the 12 monkey principle, that realized this, one after the other, after the other, after the other, that passing along that idea itself is enough to influence our thoughts such that we treat each other that much better. And it's a wonderful thing. That's why it's a miracle. These sorts of things end up coming along like they do. And I find it wonderful that that is the case, and I like the idea of contributing to that sort of thing. So when it comes to this New Economic, I see it as an economic declaration of independence of sorts, you might say. Now you can look at it from the angle of, a lot of people talk about the national debt and the Federal Reserve. So this system that we've created up till now, this a fractional reserve currency that is run by Federal Reserve, which is a coalition of private banks and board members that determine monetary policy, that are in a way, I believe, technically contracted out by the federal government in order to maintain a consistent banking system and economic system. And provide some slight changes to the present policy in order to maintain things like I believe they're the two metrics which they're really responsible for are that of inflation and employment. So they're charged with making sure that inflation stays low, that it doesn't go crazy and go nuts, and also that that the unemployment level stays down in our country. And this has been working pretty well for a while. But at the same time, there are issues that come with, certainly as we can see in the last 10 years, especially since the crash in 2009, that the Federal Reserve has just been, in a way, in a lot of cases, just printing money. Now, this is something they call modern monetary theory, MMT, where I guess they gave it a name for just printing money and, you know, passing it around. But ultimately, where that leads is inflation and hyperinflation. You can use all the tricks that you want up your sleeve in order to keep that going, but it doesn't, in order to perpetuate it or kick the can down the road, but eventually the creditor comes calling. And inflation is a tax on all of our money, because when that goes up, when a dollar is worth less, then you're buying a loaf of bread for $2 where you bought it for $1. If your wages generally stay the same, then you're just going to be slowly impoverished, or quickly impoverished, depending on how bad it gets. But this is something that the commentators, economists, all of that have been warning about, and for ages upon ages. We know that this happens when you increase the monetary supply in an artificial manner. And so it should be quite, amongst those in the know, they should know that, let's say, the trillions of dollars that they're talking about spending at Congress and in the Senate, actually sending that out into the economy and just basically using that money for the federal government to do whatever it wants to, is not only it's kind of an abuse of the government's authority. It's a overreach on their part, because they're not operating off of taxes. So they take the taxes, they take our taxes, it gets sent back to them, they utilize that in the economy in order to pay their workers. Their workers take that money and spend it in the rest of the economy, and it goes around, and it's a great carousel and wheel of fortune. It's wonderful at its ideal. But when you're just printing out money in order to pay your workers on the federal government level, what you're doing is just flooding the market with this extra currency, devaluing the currency, and generally causing trouble in the free market economy. So when those trillions of dollars really start getting spent, that's where this inflation kicks off. And you can see what has happened in Weimar Germany in the 1920s, when people were, you know, going to their, I mean, the most ridiculous examples is when people were just, you know, a whole pile of money that they'd have to put together to go down and buy a loaf of bread. And apparently as well, that there would be times where the price would change in the span of a day. You'd have a loaf of bread for 20 marks, that by the end of the day it's 25. And people's wages were increasing on the regular. I mean, at the time, I believe this might have been the first instance of such a thing being imposed upon an economic system on people. So this would have been very new. And they're like, okay, well, what the hell do we do about this? And they figured that, okay, we'll just print money and it'll go up to a higher level. And or, I mean, it's the sort of thing where they didn't know what to do. And what happens, just what happened. Now we can look back on that and be like, okay, now we know that that doesn't work. And we can't just print money out and pay for people at the governmental level from a centralized authority and think that we're going to, you know, end up with something good is going to come out of that. It's not. Besides which, this itself would increase the national debt even further, and that has no end until we put an end to it. So otherwise, we are beholden to a monetary system that has become really oppressive. And when that's the case, it's good to let go, you know. Ultimately, it's just a tool. So this particular tool that we've used for all this time, you can imagine like a wrench. Okay, it got rusty. time to drop it and pick up another one. So we have to, it's something to watch out for is the inflation. And it's already happening. We can see that. But the way out of that is to create a new economic system. And that's what this new economic, the three-part triforce, trifecta action to it, does. It creates a new economy. And it could be any jurisdictional level that any organization or collection or group of people want to put together. So long as they have, good solid ownership records, like, you're solid. Everybody benefits from this. And when, in our case, an economic system has gotten to a point where it's so weighty that there's no point in carrying it anymore, you just drop the thing and boom, here you go. Make up a new one. It involves the creation of currency. So, you got solid ownership records, and you have some way in order to create some currency, whether it's coin or paper or it's shells or it's you know, bottle caps. I mean, whatever it is, you can use just about anything in order to create that new economy. And it works for the owners, works for the renters, and everyone else. And so I would encourage everyone to check that out. Again, it's a new economic. That is The Great Awakening, Part 1. This I released, full release, in September of 2019. And passed it around. It appears that it's in some circles, top level and bottom, and even in some of the middle circles as well. It's going around. It's been going around the world for a little while, and it's one of the many things that is being censored today as well. And I'd like to make note of that too. This censorship that's happening online is clearly one of the worst aspects of this totalitarian and authoritarian attack on us. And it's combined with the muzzling that if perpetuated is no good. So it's best for us to avoid that. Adding a little bit here, a little bit of my own personal story on this front. When I came up with this idea, new economic, back in 2019, originally in May, and I didn't even mention it or write it down for a couple of months just because it's like, okay, let's make sure that this thing is on the level, and let's not pass something out there that could do more damage than good. But it finally came on, and that was after 15 years of research and dialogue that I'd had with just about everyone I could possibly find, going to every different bar and coffee shop and anyone I could talk to, whether it's online, in person, asking them about the economy, what do they think about politics, what do they think about everything, education, are they in a good place, are they in a bad place, is this the state of the world, is it beneficial for them, is there any way that they can see it bettered, can they see it better, where do you think it's going, all that sort of deal. And I saw a lot of the, also in tandem with trying to figure out a method in order to improve our lives and improve the state of the world, state of conditions, that sort of thing, in the advancement of humanity and civilization. as well, there was the flip side of the coin that was like, okay, there's trouble ahead, so heads up. To quote Nicki Minaj's one of her recent Twitter tweets, there's a bus coming, so make sure you don't get hit. So I saw that some while back that there was a bus coming. I was like, okay, how can this is also keep that in mind, that there is some folks at the top in authoritative positions, groups of elite and super rich, who really are trying to take over the world through nefarious means to benefit themselves and screw out just about the entire population. And I thought, okay, well, let's find a way out of that too, while we're at it. So, that was building up for years and years. And I've been putting that together, often enough on my own, researching all that. I give a little bit more primer on this, very specifically, and also adding in the environmental aspects, beneficial, that is to say, environmental aspects to this plan on a video on my YouTube page. So if you go to Garrett Tufte, on YouTube, you should be able to find it there. The video I put out in February of 2020. So this idea I put out in September, officially fully in September of 2019. And it was shortly after that that you started hearing the rumblings from China about this virus. And at first I thought, oh, okay, well, it's China, you know, we don't know anything about them. Who knows what they're doing to their own people? And on a side note, right quick, I should say that when it comes to determining what's going on the other side of the world, especially when they got this giant firewall that we're not allowed to really see, and the only thing that really gets out of China is what's officially sanctioned by the communist government, It's hard to tell what's really going on there. But one thing you can use, that you can know, is what their policies have been. And I look at one in particular, when it comes to the one child per family policy. And, you know, whether or not they needed to do that in order to keep their population to some sort of stable level and not have this, quote, population bomb, as I called it. Whether or not they did, that was really necessary. And I don't think it was. Probably not. Then again, I wasn't there. Nonetheless, what you find is what that, in order to enforce that, just imagine the type of oppression that a people would be under in order to enforce that policy. What sort of actions would a government take, and what sort of intrusions into your own private life would occur in order to enforce that policy? So just imagine that. And now look at it and be like, okay, that'd be horrific, absolutely awful, to have the government knocking on your door and checking to make sure that you don't have any extra kids. Like, it's a, this has been going on. I think they brought that in the early 70s that Mao brought it in. Or was it the late? I think it was early 70s. And that's been going on there now ever since then. Now, apparently they changed that. They changed that to in around, I think it was 2016, where they said, okay, now you can have more kids. You can have two. And then recently, back in May, they said, okay, you can have three. Because the thing is that it's like a Sorcerer's Apprentice. You start putting that on people and you enforce that sort of policy. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen to your people. I feel bad for, my hearts go out to the Chinese folks who've been living under this for decades like they have. I try to imagine what it would be like, but I really can't. And from what I hear is that it's not fun. And so that, and otherwise, I mean, regardless of whether they really had to do that, I think there are other ways. But nonetheless, what it will do is influence, doing that sort of thing will influence and create and perpetuate an entire generation of abusive people and abusive institutions, abusive organizations that just perpetuate until people stand up for themselves and say, no, I'm not going to do this, and have respect for themselves. And I think that's happening over there. It's hard to tell, again, because we don't hear what's going on. But so that's a bit of a primer on my general thoughts on China and the government over there, which, again, the actual details are hard to know, but just looking at the logical consequences of their stated policies result in something very ugly. And it doesn't really end until the people stand up and say no. So really, that's where we're at, too, with this. Both in the United States, in Canada, Australia, in Italy, in the UK, United Kingdom, in Germany, really anywhere that this virus panic is being imposed on folks and used as a rationale for illegal mandates that go against our basic bodily sovereignty and all our most cherished and sacred freedoms. That's where we are, too. And these things don't end until we stand up as a people and say no. Now, we don't even need to, it's not even necessary that there be some great groundswell of thousands and thousands of people coming together to say no. That's great, and that's important to show that the people don't want this, and that as a whole, like, they're not going to stand for it. It's important for people to see that, to see that there are huge numbers of people who aren't going to stand for this and who are not taking this lying down. But ultimately, it comes down to the individual, because this really only stops, abuse really only stops when you say no. It's not when someone else says no. It's not when 1,000 people on the other side of the world say no. It's not when your neighbor says no. It's when you say no and say that you're not going to be abused anymore. That's when it happens. That's when things change. No one else is going to fix your life for you. But you can stand up for yourself. Say that you have self-respect. That you don't deserve to be treated like a child. That you matter, and to stand up for that, stand up for what, for your rights, to not be abused by others, and not to abuse others either, Because that's what so much of this is. It's a cycle of abuse that gets imposed from top level on all the way down, from the top circle to the next top circle, to the middle circle, to the middle lower circle, to the lower. And everywhere in there is another person in the midst of that chain, perpetuating some authoritative instruction, mandate, dictate upon others. And every one of these is a person. There's someone there. Along every one of these circles who thought, okay, well, you know, I need to keep my job, and I'm worried about this, I'm worried about that. Okay, I'll just, you know, ultimately their principles, they pushed away their principles for a minute so that they could keep their position. And then they passed along that abuse. And then passed it on to the next person who pushed away their principles for a minute. And then passed along that abuse. Who passed along the next person who pushed away their principles for a minute and passed it on. And by the end of it, these criminals aim to make criminals out of all of us. If you're ruled by fear, and if you're ruled by bullies, then you become a bully too. If you want to be a part of that system. Now, there are enough people here, not only in this country, but across the world, who are not willing to be a part of that system. I refuse to be abused, and I refuse to abuse anyone else. Now, you can pick however which way you want on that front. Are you gonna say, no, I'm not going to do this? In which case, you might lose your job, maybe. You get some people around you to stand up as well at the same time. There are strength in numbers on this. This is why unions are so important these days. Because that you get together with your fellows who are all vital and important to the whole system itself. And you stand up and you say no, you're gonna have an effect. And they are going to back down. The abusers and the tyrants at the top, they are going to back down on that front. If you really do stand up for yourself. Now, if you end up losing your job or something like that, then believe you me, you're going to come out better in the end. Now, if you refuse to be abused and you say no, great. You know where you can go? There's tons of places you can go. There's tons of people out there who've made the same decision that you have. You just got to go out and find them. They're out there. There's more of them every day. So take heart and have some hope on that front. And stand up for yourselves. Have some respect. And we'll get through this. And we won't be, we're not going to get pushed into a nation of slaves. Like, not happening. We're not doing this. We're going to break out of it. Takes a little while. This thing really was quite the attack. Didn't necessarily expect it to come on as quick as it did. Or in the manner such that it did. But here we are. Part of this too, the group psychology aspect of this is once that fear and that cycle of abuse really gets rolling, there's groupthink that shows up. And you can read about this in 1984. They went into it especially. I don't know that from what I remember, I didn't see necessarily a definition of it, but in Orwell's work. But what I did see is this sort of thing occurring in the real world. And, you know, there's nothing terribly wrong with that. It's kind of like schools of fish, you know. You see the schools of fish flowing around, or birds in flocks. There's strength in numbers, and there's safety in numbers too. You know, you're less likely to get as a small fish in the ocean, you're less likely to get gobbled up by a shark if you're amongst a big old school of them. So that applies to humanity as well. We don't necessarily want to single ourselves out. Some of us do, you know, like myself and many others who have this sort of rabid, not necessarily rabid, but that have this individualism that that they push for and they go with. And that's what America is all about. We're a nation of individualists. It's the individual rights that we really adhere to, and that's vital. You know, that's served us very well for a very long time. But groupthink is a bit opposite of that. And once you really get that going, and it's the holy grail of those in power, the con artists, that sort of thing. If they can get enough people to think a particular thing, then those people will just do their work for them. They don't have to go out and keep, you know, badgering the peasants and of the population to hate those witches, you know, for instance, during the witch crisis of the late 1600s, early 1700s, the witch hunts that the Catholic Church was putting on. At some point, you just look like, imagine that there's at least one person up there, there's a group of quasi-corrupt Catholic priests at that time who apparently didn't like certain women or were upset about possibly losing their monopoly on the spiritual world at that time, that said, oh, well, they're a witch, let's burn them. And the townspeople grab their torches and charge over toward her hut and drag her out and throw her on a pike and go after her. And that happened all over the place. And at some point, it got to be groupthink, such that the population itself ended up doing the work for the authorities who imposed this terrible injustice. And so watch out for that, because that's bad news. It's bad news. If they get you caught in groupthink, then really it's like, it's like the population itself doing damage to itself. You're doing the work of them. You're like the foot soldiers for the syndicate, basically. And again, that ties in with that cycle of abuse. That at some point, you just have to say, no, I'm not going to do that. You don't want to do it? Don't do it. Someone can give you a really compelling rationale for why to do something. Well, sure. Or they can provide something for you if you do it, you know, i.e., hey, if you clean the floors here at our place, we'll pay you some money. Like, or if you make some food for me, hey, I'll pay you some money. Or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's how these things sort of work. I get down to the basis of it, and if the money itself ends up getting corrupted, which, in some case, it has, to a certain extent, and even more so in those who are in charge of the monetary policy, i.e., in this case, what's happening with Congress, with the massive amount of money that they're adding into the economy, ultimately going to result in this ridiculous inflationary period that there's only really one way to get out of it, and that is to jettison the currency in one manner or the other and create a new one and create a new economy. And that's where that new economic comes in on that front in my contribution to this, probably my biggest contribution to this Great Awakening. And so what that brings on as well is a new renaissance. It really does, because it creates a radical freedom that we haven't seen in over 100 years, if not longer. Because when I hear the term, the phrase "Make America Great Again," what that reminds me of is a time period that existed roughly between 1865 and 1912, and that was an era that saw incredible advancements in technology, that saw an incredible amount of liberty and freedom for people, that saw all sorts of, it was the period where, right after the Civil War, finally ended that chattel slavery, and people were on a on a whole, so much more free than they had ever been across the nation. Now, there are still things that you wouldn't say are perfectly just that happened during that time, because, I mean, you really don't, you can't make perfection. You can only get closer to it. It's like an asymptote, as they call them in calculus, where it goes closer and closer and closer to one, but it never actually gets there, you know? But nonetheless, that's the history of American history of the progression of societies, is that you can only get closer to that perfection. You can't actually get there, which also ties back into a phrase that I'd like to use called, for me, the journey is the destination. And if you can look at life in such a manner, then you will never be dissatisfied. To enjoy the process much more so than the reward. This ties back into, I noticed this especially when I was doing stone carving work, that it was less that I wanted to have this large stone figure, but I really enjoyed the process of carving it out. Well, at the end of it, it's nice to have that pretty statue there, and it's enjoyable. You get to look at it and be like, "Oh yeah, I made that," or add it to the scenery of your life. But for me, it's the process of doing it that is really the reward itself. The final product is just a sideshow, you might say. But I would encourage that as well for those of you out there who have been interested or are interested in finding something new, something creative in your life to do in this new renaissance, this new economy that is coming on through fits and starts that will establish itself in a better union between us and in this society, in our country, hopefully across the world. While you are looking for, hopefully, you'll end up in a position where you're so free that you don't know what to do with yourself. And in such a moment, eventually, in such a time, eventually you will find something to do with yourself. And when you do, when you find that thing that you want to do, I hope you can really enjoy the process and make the journey your destination. And on that note, I think I'll finish it up here. We're about at about 3 o'clock. There we go. Looks like we're right about on point. Again, stand up for yourselves. Have some self-respect. Much love to everybody out there. Stick to your guns, stick to your principles, and we'll make it through this just fine. This has been the Maverick Radio Hour, coming to you from Westport, Kansas City, Missouri, on September 22nd, 2021. And I'm your host, Maverick himself, wishing you peace, love, harmony, justice, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.